Numerous reports of Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers taking people with no criminal records into custody continue to keep many neighborhoods on edge. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio, and this is Fronteras, a public radio show about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. Versions of just who is being deported under the Trump administration vary, but as the number of undocumented immigrants in custody rises, so does fear in their communities. More and more, it appears that those who have committed crimes are not the only ones who are a priority for removal. In response, organizations across the country are educating immigrants about their rights when it comes to ICE. Reynaldo Leaños Jr. reports for the Texas Standard on one local organization in the Rio Grande Valley going door to door.
People are kind of weary, you know, about outsiders and stuff, so let me just...
Gabriela Zavala is knocking on doors in a predominantly immigrant neighborhood in the city of Port Isabel in the Rio Grande Valley.
Buenos dias!
She's with La Unión del Pueblo Entero, which translates roughly to A Whole People United. The group is also known as Lupe. Zavala is here to hand out flyers and answer questions about what people should do if they come into contact with Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents or with local law enforcement. She says they've been doing this type of outreach once a week for the past month.
If you notice, like, I'll be like, buenos dias, you know, like talking to them in Spanish. And so they'll be confident to open. But we do see that a lot, you know, that people don't want to come to the door. They'll come or they'll, like, they'll peek through the windows. Once they see that you're, you know, like you're from an organization, then they'll be more, you know, confident with opening the door.
Zavala estimates so far that they've passed out more than 250 Know Your Rights flyers and talked to about 80 people. With Zavala today, it's Julieta Paredes, another volunteer. Paredes is 25, and she grew up in this exact neighborhood and says she's noticed a sense of fear steadily growing within the community.
My mom, just like 3 days ago, she was telling me that a lot of families are moving out, like whole families are moving to Mexico.
And not just undocumented families, but also families with mixed immigration statuses.
So that worries me because it's people that have not lived here a year or two. It's people that have been here for more than 15 years.
Paredes herself is not a citizen. She started volunteering with Lupe ever since the group helped her fill out her Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA. Through that program, she's been able to attend the University of Texas Rio Grande Valley. That's in part why she's so committed to the group's vision of helping people, whether citizens or non-citizens, know their rights. On this morning, Zavala and Paredes meet an undocumented grandmother from a mixed-status family. She didn't want her real name being used. She's afraid of being identified and deported. So we'll call her Norma. Norma is from Mexico in her early 60s and works at South Padre Island cleaning condos. She says ICE recently showed up in their neighborhood at around 6 in the morning and came to her doorstep.
I opened the door and they showed me a photo. They said that they were looking for this person. I said that person didn't live here. I didn't know him and I could only speak about my family.
Zavala tells Norma it is her right to keep the door closed, even if ICE agents are at the door. She has the right to not answer any of their questions, especially if agents don't have a warrant. Norma says later that day, she heard ICE agents rounded up 7 people in her community. She now wakes up early every day to be on the lookout for more ICE agents. Whenever she hears a knock at the door, she sends her teenage granddaughter, a U.S. citizen, to peek through the window to see who's outside. Norma says her granddaughter has been taking all of this really hard. She's been crying a lot, especially when they go to church.
I asked her why she's crying, and she says it's because she doesn't want to go to Mexico. She's afraid she'll drown crossing the river. I tell her, but you don't have to swim because you have papers.
Norma doesn't support President Trump or his administration's increased focus on deportations, but she believes God put him in office for a reason.
Ustedes no tienen idea cómo yo he llorado. Yo sé que el presidente Trump no tiene la culpa.
You all don't know how much I've cried, but I know President Trump isn't to blame. He didn't go out there and bring me here. I have to pay a price for coming without documents, but I know God will take control of the governments. God puts kings in power and takes them out. There's hope in that verse.
Zavala and Paredes leave Norma with a flyer and thank her for letting them into her home. They talk about possibly planning a meeting at her house where other community members can also learn about their rights.
That was Reynaldo Leaños Jr. reporting. Many of the unauthorized immigrants living in America have children who are U.S. citizens. As KUT's Joy Diaz reports, parents are worried about what might happen to their kids if they are deported.
Veronica Avila Zavala is a mother of two.
La niña tiene 9 y el niño tiene 7.
A 9-year-old girl and a 7-year-old boy.
Es tremenda esa niña. El niño no, el niño es más calmado.
The girl is a firecracker, Avila Zavala says. Not the boy. He's normally very mellow. This past November, tragedy struck the family. Avila Zavala's life partner and the father of her children was murdered. He was deported at the end of October. And she says, by November, a local gang in his small town of southern Mexico had killed him. Avila Zavala says he had only been in Mexico for 2 weeks. Now, her biggest fear is that she could be deported too. I am afraid, she says. If I am deported, who's going to take care of my kids? The state? The foster care system? That is the fear in the hearts of many, many Texans. It's estimated the unauthorized immigrant population in the state is about 1.5 million people. Since so many could be affected by new parameters for deportations, the Consulate of Mexico and other nonprofits are providing law clinics for parents across the state. The idea is to help them fill out and notarize powers of attorney on behalf of their children. At the Mexican consulate, attorney Daniela Lytle told parents the documents are not living wills and they are not custody orders.
It's really not a long-term document. It's meant to be a Band-Aid until a court order is in place. That's how
they still need to go through the court.
They still need to go to the court if custody has to be established. This is just something in place to have in the event of a very quick emergency.
Say, for instance, the parents are picked up by immigration agents while at work. The power of attorney allows someone the parents trust to pick up their children from school. Or, if the kids were to get sick, the power of attorney allows the new guardians to make medical decisions on behalf of the children. Waiting in line outside the consulate was Magdalena Tercero. She's a mother of three who came to the clinic with her friend Heather Hoff. Tercero asked Hoff to be her children's guardian in case she and her husband are deported.
Es la única persona de confianza que yo tengo aquí.
She's the only person I trust with my children, she says, because I don't have any relatives in the United States. Both women are clearly shaken by the step they're about to take, but they're certain signing that power of attorney is the right thing to do. Tercero says that as a child, she was a close friend with Hoff's husband. So when he married Hoff, Tercero and Hoff immediately became friends too. The grown-ups are inseparable, and so are their children.
They play a lot together too. We hang out probably like every other weekend. Our kids always play together.
If the Terceros were to be deported, Hoff and her husband would be taking in three children on top of the two they already have.
I mean, they've done a lot for us, so I'm sure they would do the same for us if the roles were switched.
If, like Tercero and like Avila Zavala, you know someone in need of a power of attorney for their children, call your nearest consular office. And beware of gougers. Reports out of California say unscrupulous attorneys and notaries are charging up to $250 for powers of attorney that ought to be free. There are parents' right under Chapter 34 of the Texas Family Code. For Fronteras, I'm Joy Diaz.
In New Mexico, an Albuquerque church recently offered sanctuary to an Albuquerque grandmother under threat of deportation. Her name is Emma. She's originally from Honduras, and she's been living in the U.S. for 25 years. The Albuquerque Church is one of over a dozen churches in the nation to provide sanctuary to an immigrant. KUNM's Chris Borrow spoke with Justin Reamer Thamert about this case. He's the executive director of the New Mexico Coalition for Immigrant Justice.
So faith leaders announced that a woman who fears deportation is being offered sanctuary in an Albuquerque church. How did she seek sanctuary? Did she just reach out to the church? How did this all happen?
So Emma is a woman who has been in the United States for 25 years, and she contacted the Faith Coalition about her situation. She had an upcoming court visit with immigration, and instead of going to that visit, she was afraid that she would be detained. And so the Faith Coalition has been in conversation with a number of faith communities across Albuquerque about opening their doors for sanctuary. So we brought this request to a number of those churches, and the Quaker Meeting House said that they would be open to receiving her.
And so how much protection does the church offer her?
That's a very good question, and that's one that we're continuing to figure out the specifics. At the ICE check-in that she had, immigration told her lawyer that there are certain locations where they won't go. And so we would like to think that that means that they're continuing to honor the sensitive locations memo, which says that hospitals, places of worship, and schools are places that ICE will not go.
If ICE showed up, could the church say, no, we're not letting you in?
The volunteers who are stationed there 24/7 do have a protocol to make sure that ICE is complying with the legal process. And so insofar as they are stepping outside of their legal bounds, the church would say, you are not open to come in.
And there is a history of sanctuary churches here in the States, right?
That's correct. Going back to the 1980s, churches have opened their doors to offer sanctuary to Central American families primarily who are fleeing war. The Quakers were actually one who at that time were part of the process in supporting the sanctuary movement. And so this is something that has had something of a resurgence over the last few years for people who should have prosecutorial discretion or who have a situation where they don't fall under the deportation priorities of an administration. And so sanctuary right now is taking that form of encouraging the administration and ICE to honor prosecutorial discretion and humanitarian parole for families like Emma.
What do you think compels a congregation or a religious group to open their doors to someone like Emma?
I think that a lot of people see this as a way to put their faith into action, that these are trying times, and we've seen so many people who have been targeted because of their religion, because of their nationality or their immigration status. And people of faith and individuals of moral conscience recognize that there's something that we can do and that we must do, that we must put our bodies on the line and really live into our faith values.
Are you at all concerned that ICE may no longer recognize these sanctuary churches?
It certainly is a concern. Of the churches that have offered sanctuary across the country, ICE has respected those boundaries, and we are hoping that they will continue to. Cases like Emma's are very sympathetic, and I think targeting someone who has a U.S. citizen children and who is a grandmother and who has an American husband would be very detrimental to our understanding of what due process is and the kinds of people who we want in our community.
That was KUNM's Chris Boros talking with Justin Reamer Thamert of the New Mexico Coalition for Immigrant Justice. Coming up on Fronteras, a look at what happened when Alabama passed a tough immigration law.
They'll see in time that attacking a community is not the way to have immigration reform happen. Because, I mean, here in Alabama, we fought back and we had a lot of that repealed.
We'll explore that story and a new lawsuit against the Trump administration when we come back. Thank you. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to Fronteras. The Trump administration is fighting another lawsuit, this time from the ACLU of San Diego and Imperial Counties in California. They're suing the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Justice for allegedly depriving immigrants of their due process rights by detaining them for months before giving them an opportunity to see an immigration judge. The ACLU says the delays will only get longer if immigration officials step up deportations. Michael Lipkin of KPBS talked with Bardas Vakili, senior staff attorney with the San Diego area ACLU.
So you say there are people waiting 2 months or more before they can see a judge. Is this just an issue of a case backlog?
I think it's more than that. I think it's partly a lack of resources from the immigration judges, but it's much more than that, decisions to detain people without any regard for what the court system can handle.
The Department of Homeland Security, you mentioned in your suit, has the authority to take people that they believe are not citizens into custody without a warrant, and the federal government has a tremendous legal power when it comes to immigration. What are the actual rules that they need to follow in terms of bringing people in these detention centers before a judge?
So the statute requires, the Immigration Nationality Act requires that within 48 hours, they have to decide whether they're going to pursue deportation against them and then file a case with the judge. They also have to decide whether to hold that person in custody. The code also requires promptness in all of the proceedings. And the Constitution, we argue, is what requires someone to be brought in much more promptly than what's being done. In the criminal context, it's very clear that if you arrest somebody, they have to go before a judge within a very short amount of time, 48 hours usually. But here, people are waiting. People that have lived here for years and years and years are waiting for months before they get their case even started.
Has a suit on these, bringing up these points, bringing up these issues, been filed against the Department of Homeland Security before?
This is the first one I know of that alleges delays of this magnitude, just locking people away and lock people up and throwing away the key.
Why is the suit being brought in San Diego? There are detention centers across the country.
Sure, and as I understand it, the wait times in detention centers across the country are also egregiously bad, weeks-long delays. But here, the delays were so egregious. One of our plaintiffs has been in detention since November 17th and has not yet seen a judge and won't till April. So the delays are so egregious here that we had no choice but to file.
That was Michael Lipkin of KPBS speaking with ACLU attorney Bardas Vakili. As President Trump clamps down on immigration, the state of Alabama offers more clues to what exactly this could mean. In 2011, Alabama passed what was called the toughest immigration law in the country. There were intended and unintended consequences. Much of the law was struck down by the courts, but it provides a snapshot of potential challenges ahead for the Trump administration. Dan Carson of WBHM in Birmingham explains.
This is a middle schooler just outside Birmingham in 2011.
I think they're going to come in our house and come kick the door, and they're going to take my mom and dad.
This is a college senior just outside Birmingham last week.
I don't know if I'm going to see my parents tomorrow.
Fernanda Herrera's father crossed the Mexican border illegally when she was two. She and her mom flew in months later with visas now expired. The Samford University honors student is covered under DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. So for now, she likely won't be deported, but she's scared.
It's supposed to be a happy time. I'm about to graduate from college, the first in my family to do so, and my parents have worked so hard to get me through these 4 years. And knowing how detention centers are and thinking about my parents having to go through that, knowing that my family could be separated, it's just really difficult.
Her family also feared that in 2011. Alabama had enacted a law that, among other things, nullified contracts, leases, water service, anything, and even made it a crime to give a ride to someone in the country illegally. The law's author said the goal was to attack every aspect of life. Herrera sees something similar happening nationally now, but she hopes the U.S. will learn from Alabama.
They'll see in time that attacking a community is not the way to have immigration reform happen. Because, I mean, here in Alabama, we fought back and we had a lot of that repealed.
Suits by advocacy groups and the Justice Department blocked much of the law, including a requirement that schools check students' immigration status. But that was after farmers' crops rotted and other industries lost labor and business as families fled the state. Jeremy Love is an immigration lawyer who says he's feeling deja vu.
There's a lot of fear going on right now. I've had people say they want to do a phone consultation rather than come in my office because they're afraid of going out of their house.
He predicts mass deportations will hurt the U.S. economy and trigger legal backlash similar to what happened in Alabama. He has more immediate concerns for his clients, though.
People are leaving a very dangerous situation in their home country.
State Representative Jack Williams agrees, but isn't swayed. The co-sponsor of the 2011 Alabama law thinks values, not necessarily physical danger, should determine who gets to stay.
Today, many people are coming to America from very unstable situations. 100 years ago, people came to America because they wanted to be Americans.
He says his stance against illegal immigration is principle, not personal.
I think there's a richness that we enjoy from the diversity that comes from people coming from around the world. And I'm not opposed or afraid of immigrants. I just would like to see us follow the law. I think that gives everybody a clear roadmap on how we should operate as a civil society.
If Alabama's any indication, that roadmap could include hard-to-gauge economic disruption and detours for costly court battles over how immigration laws are enforced. For NPR News, I'm Dan Carson in Birmingham.
And that's it for Fronteras and our stories from the Southwest this week. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org. Alexis Yancey produced this broadcast. Shelley Koffler is our executive producer. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Thanks for joining us. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.